And second podcast clause resumed. So you're giving me this look that tells me I'm probably going to regret what I'm saying now.
You're just punchy. It's like 9 o'clock at night. We've had...
Do you know why I'm punchy?
Super full weeks. It's Friday.
I cannot complete a thought with you to save my skin.
I know, because I am an equal participant. Not just a mere listener.
You're not just my sounding board?
Indeed, no.
You're not my foil?
I'm not just the color commentary. Oh, no. I am a full-on...
You're not my Horatio?
Yo-yo.
That would make me Hamlet, the main star. And you'd be like the person that comes in and says, Hamlet, why are you so crazy?
Don't call me the ho.
Don't kill yourself. Life is worth living. Put down that sword. Be more reasonable. You have Denmark to rule.
All right, so people have followed us into this podcast. We need to have something decent and substantive
exactly.
to say.
Okay, as a little follow-up to our previous podcast that was recorded so very long ago,
yes.
I just got to tell you, these particular kinds of things that we saw are called fireballs.
You already said that.
I know, but here's why they're called fireballs. Venus, the planet Venus in the sky, has a magnitude of -4. You're like totally interested, right? Okay, check it out. There is a rating of brightness for stars.
This is so Leo.
Venus? What do you mean? Why is it Leo?
A rating of brightness, like, you know.
Oh, I see. Because Leos are obsessed with their own
and
shininess.
My Venus is in Leo, so maybe there's a correspondence. Anyway, go ahead.
When your Venus is in Leo, it is a -4. That means how bright it is in the sky. It's a measure of luminosity, amount of light. When we saw that fireball, it was greater than the brightness of Venus. And so that's why it became a fireball. So when you see a shooting star that's hella bright, particularly brighter than Venus, you can call it a fireball. And the good people at Astronomy Magazine would not disagree with you.
Well, that was really important to take up 5 minutes to describe. Okay. All right. What else do you have on your list that's
nothing.
Substantive?
Nothing.
Substantive.
I don't.
You're kidding. We've started a fourth podcast and you have nothing else?
I kind of do, but I also don't. I think it's important to discover the topics, not just list them off. I'm really interested in talking more about why those shooting stars appear to come from a particular constellation each year, and only that one constellation. You'd think if the Earth was traveling through a cloud of debris, it would come from everywhere. They would come from everywhere, but they don't. They only come from a particular place. Which is incredibly interesting.
This actually is kind of pertinent in that our name is Big Sky. I can give you that.
Totally. Exactly.
I can give you that.
Exactly.
Sort of.
In the big sky, there are
stars. But we've already covered it.
Yeah,
we've got it. No more. Not on this one.
Sure. Yeah, right. So, I've had this particular thing going on with Facebook. Like, I've just started using it for like 2 weeks or whatever. And my favorite thing to do on Facebook is Farmville.
You mentioned that last time.
I know, but it's so true. I have been building my own little fiefdom, and I get why people dig it so much. But what's really cool is that I didn't really understand it initially, the whole social dynamic, because literally, to get things done on my farm, the more people I invite to be my friends, my Farmville friends, the more stuff I can get done. Like, I go to their farm, and I clean up. I feed their goats and I harvest their corn and stuff, and they come to my farm and they do it. I have added around 15 Farmville friends in the last week, and here's how I found them. There's this website called Gamers Unite where people can go and post their, like, in Farmville, if I raise a baby goat to an adult goat, that once you do it, it goes bring and it makes this little dring sound, and then you can... It says, you've raised a goat. Share it with your friends. And in order not to spam everybody on my Facebook list, I've created a little sub-list for Farmville people. I'm learning all the tricks. So I send it out to my Farmville people, and they get a little notification that says, hey, Paul raised a goat to adulthood. Go, Paul. Click here to get a baby bottle of milk, which you need like 6 or 8 bottles, baby bottles of milk in order to feed these goats to get them growing. You get that look in your eyes like... Why don't you stop talking now?
Sorry, I'm really tired.
So anyway, I have I have people who don't even speak English who are my Farmville friends. And their stuff is in like...
Are you paying fair wages?
I help them out and they help me out. It's a mutual back rub society.
Mm-hmm. That's what the slave owner said.
I'm nobody's slave and they're not my slave. It's voluntary. They can say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
But they speak French. So I don't know what they're saying to me, but it'll have a little icon of a plank of wood. And I was like, yeah, I'll take a plank of wood. And they're like, thank you for the plank of wood.
Merci.
Merci. Exactly. So I have this entire conversation with all of these actions with this group of about 20 people. And I never have to say my own words. All the actions are scripted. I raise a prize pumpkin that's 25 pounds. I share it with my friends. They get bags of fertilizer. I need hinges to build my grain barn. I ask them for hinges and they provide them. It is an entire world of communication without language. It's all icons and graphics. There's no words involved. You don't need words. It's amazing.
So, okay, so cut to the chase. What is it? What is it that is fun about this? Like, why is this replacing interacting in life?
I mean, why have I stopped going outside during the day and I draw my curtains and I have these big sallow rings under my eyes?
Yes.
I'm just exaggerating.
So am I. But why every time do I walk by your computer, you know, I see you playing with Farmville?
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why.
Should I be worried?
Yeah, you should definitely be worried. Is there a number you can call for support? Spouses of Farmville addicts? I'm not a Farmville addict, but here's the thing. The game is based...
Most addicts don't realize they're addicts.
Yeah, I know. That's the first step, right? Admitting you're an addict?
You mean to it, yeah. But there's a higher power.
Is there a Farmville 12-step group? I don't think if I've been doing something for a week, I need a 12-step group yet. I probably just need full-time employment.
Precisely. And is this maybe a substitution for
I'll tell you what it does do. When I am out applying for all these different jobs and I'm getting rejections and all this kind of stuff, I feel quite powerless to control my world. I had a true existential crisis driving to Durango last night to pick up from the airport. I'm driving on the road and I have the clear knowledge that my entire life, everything I've done, everyone I've met, every job I've held, every experience I've ever gone through was not in my control. Most of the contours of my life have been sculpted by situation and other people. And it's like people have this myth that they make their life, but like everything about your life comes to you through the experiences and the opportunities and the greater squishy goodness of our societal little fabric. So how do you navigate it? What cords do you pull to make life go this way or go that way or do whatever? I mean, what is that thing?
Great question.
I have a couple theories.
So do I.
What are your theories?
Well, I don't know that it's a theory. I would say it's a tool.
What's your tool?
One tool is creative visualization and just full-on desire. Like, what am I drawn to?
So when you say that, what you're saying, just to break it down to its fundamental level, is that the imaginative space inside your consciousness is able to construct images of experiences you have before you have them, and then you somehow charge them, and then reality shifts to have you bring those experiences to you.
Yeah, I mean, another approach to that is prayer, you know, where there's just the sense totally. Of imagining myself with a full-hearted feeling. This is what I want. This is this or something better. This is my highest ability to visualize or conjure or to pre-experience. And then I'll charge those and experience them as if they already are. And I'll feel gratitude for it. and then I'll let it go.
I have a question for you. I respect that process that you're talking about. In fact, I've engaged in that process a whole lot. But like, what if that was just your way of, what is it? Of pretending to have control over the inevitability of situations in your life. Not pretending, but you were engaging in this ritual, this process, right? This thing you're doing spiritually. And that gives you a sense of you're at the wheel of your life.
Well, it's just, it could be entirely superstitious. And you could be right. It's just, I have had so many experiences of really, like, clarity, getting clear on what I would really mm-hmm. love mm-hmm. to experience. And mm-hmm. I don't know if my subconscious then naturally pulls me or gravitates me to that experience. I mean, I don't completely...
Yeah.
I don't claim to understand the dynamics of it.
Right.
But I do know that when I get super clear, mm-hmm. I feel almost presentient. Mm-hmm. Like I already know what's going to happen. Yeah. And I'm engaging in that process and feeling gratitude for that process in the midst of that process unfolding. And I felt that way when I was identifying what kind of clients did I want to have, what sorts of relationships did I want to have with them,
mm-hmm.
where did I want them to be geographically,
mm-hmm.
Size of organization, and just mapping that out in an engaged, excited sort of way. Because it's not dry. It's certainly not academic. It's just, it feels very visceral.
No. And I don't think it's superstitious at all. I think that that's the way people talk about it, about manifestation and like visualization and like making things happen. And I feel like I came in contact with this job thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, I went down to part-time with the one job and I've been looking for another one. And like all these different rejections and stuff
mm-hmm.
has been like so intense that I usually am like a 10,000 watt, you know, hope light bulb. And I feel like it's like, I got like a, you know, kind of a bushel put over that. And I'm kind of like, so anyway, I've just been reflecting on it. Like what, anyway, it kind of gave me this somewhat humble perspective. And from that humble perspective, I was just like, I think I need to be having an almost entirely different conversation about my life with God. Like I need to, there's a level, a depth of God that I am not engaging with yet. That is, this is revealing something about that to me.
Mm.
So I went on a walk this afternoon and I just had this really basic conversation. I mean, you know how beautiful it is out here. I walked down our drive and out on that highway over
mm-hmm,
here.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody. I mean, occasionally a car came by, but literally I could see for probably 20 miles in any direction and there's nobody. It was like perfectly quiet, like no sound. And I just felt like I started over. And I was like, look, I don't know what I've been doing in my life that, you know, I'm not sure if I haven't been listening more closely or what, but I just have really become aware that like my life has been filled with so much grace and blessing that I never have to think about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been employed. I have gone to school. I have had relationships and friends and community and like this immense amount of largesse around me, like so much. And I kind of was just like, thank you so much for all of it. And can we get that going again? Like, I mean, I know I'm taking a little break here from like, you know, this total security in my world. But it was kind of cool to have it like rattled like that. I have a theory, or at least not a theory, but it's a little thread of a theory. So we listened to Stephen Forrest, that astrologer that you like so much.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the new age and sort of, I think kind of what you're talking about with the manifestation and stuff as Jupiter worship.
Exactly, Jupiter.
That Jupiter was the old archetype for abundance. And like the whole, you can manifest $10,000 in your life today, you know, just visualize. And people do that. You know, they see it and then they hold it and then it just happens for them. You know, this stuff happens. Jupiter.
However, his description of Jupiter is even better than that.
Okay.
And what I love about his description of Jupiter is that it's always painful. It's always a stretch.
Really?
You're always stretched into more than your self-worth or self-concept can handle. And so it forces you to, get bigger, to stretch. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because you have to, it's a test. It's an initiation. Mm-hmm. How much can you stretch into?
Yeah.
Are you going to play small or are you going to go for it? So those Jupiter moments are really, or those Jupiter times are not just easy. You have to grow to be able to embrace it. You have to stretch to be able to hold it. And it's painful in a quirky kind of way.
Does
that make sense?
Well, let me see if I got it. So like if I have a life that has a certain staticness to it, like I have a certain familiarity with my routines, my patterns, the amount of material energy information in my life, and then Jupiter, because we're going to call it that, pays me a visit and says, here's twice what you're used to. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the stretch that extra energy and opportunity incites in your life. Mm-hmm. Is like, now I have to rethink my social circle, now I have to rethink my education level. Mm-hmm. Now I have to rethink my business skill, my business acumen, my ability to execute, my ability to, like, I thought I knew stuff about saving or investing, but now I don't, you know. Or maybe it's some other kind of resource. Like there's all of a sudden a bunch of neat people show up in your life. And like now you're like, wow, how do I do like four friends at once that I really like? Like four people that I'm really interested in knowing more about. How do I keep all that in my life? Because I guess what you could do is ignore the new influx and you'd sort of return back to stasis eventually. But there'd be a sense of sadness because...
Right.
You knew there was more possibility.
Right, and you couldn't see it, you couldn't accept it, and you rejected it.
People do this all the time.
I know. I had a Jungian friend who talked about how it's a little bit like if you liken it to a baseball game, that you know, it's like you're just used to hitting whatever it is, hitting the ball so you can only advance one base at a time.
Yeah.
And Jupiter is like hitting a home run. It's like disruptive. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
If everybody's used to just always advancing one base,
yeah,
all of a sudden it's like, well, holy, what do we do?
Wow.
You have to all go all the way around. You're taking a risk.
Yeah.
You know, you need to run. You might be out.
You know,
and so it's uncomfortable and it's disruptive, even though
yeah.
it's exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting in like a challenging, stretching, often uncomfortable kind of way.
You know, this is fascinating because I think his name's Tim O'Reilly. He started O'Reilly Media. They're kind of like this computer technical publisher that does all this interesting stuff. Like, they'll write the book on Linux or open source software or Android or whatever. And they promote their vision. Tim O'Reilly, I think it's Tim O'Reilly, I hope I'm saying that right. I just read an article about him in Wired. And, or maybe it was Fast Company. But anyway, that they'll promote. He says companies should leave more in the commons than they take. So as a media company, they try to promote like Android as like an operating system. And they might do something with it. Like they might write a book or do something. But they try to increase interest in what's commonly available to everybody. And he was saying that this is the opposite of like an Apple who tries to put a walled garden. Like when Apple came up with all the patent lawsuits for touch, multi-touch, they, you know, when you can do multi-touch gestures on your iPhone, they didn't invent that. But they tried to patent it so no one else could have it. So they tried to like lock it down. Which is kind of like an interesting reaction to Jupiter, right? So like you get this huge bonus, like they have the iPhone and they benefited from there being the ability to integrate these new ideas, but they want to be the last one to the party. They want to close it down, you know, which is kind of like Tim O'Reilly is saying that's sort of like it's a selfish impulse. And but here's the other piece. He was talking about how he felt bad for a lot of the people in his company because when he hasn't made a ton of money. But he says that when he was in Silicon Valley and he watches all these startups, Some people just win the startup lottery. That luck plays a huge influence on whose company gets snapped up, bought up with a bunch of angel investor money for like a ton of money, and then they sell to another company, and they cash out like after 2 years. I mean, it makes these founders like multi millionaires, and you see it happens once, and everybody thinks that it's part of that everybody can just do that. And he's saying, no. For every one of those that happens, there's 100 more that didn't happen for. But as a culture, we raise up that one, and we also ascribe all these attributes to it, like, oh, the brilliance of this founder, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like Malcolm Gladwell's article, or his angle in, like, was it Blink, or which one was it? When he was talking about, you know, the 10,000-hour rule, and he's saying how we have this cowboy view that all these people who won the business lottery, are like cowboys. They're out there making it happen, but luck plays a huge portion.
Well, it's also attribution theory.
Oh, what do you mean?
Like, I studied that in college. It's that we, when we see a certain profile, we naturally attribute other qualities to it. So, for example, they showed images of men and women that were considered beautiful.
Yeah.
And so then the attributions that were naturally made to them were, oh, well, they must be happily partnered. They must have a really good job. They must be...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. All of these sort of packages that we will ascribe to people who we perceive to be attractive.
But isn't that amazing that, like, when Jupiter comes in your life and, like, makes someone a millionaire, that person starts to feel like a failure because they don't have the whole package, because they don't have the relationship, or they don't have the kids. You know, like, someone's a multimillionaire and their kids don't talk to them, or they don't have a family life or whatever, and they start feeling bad. It affects everybody, right? I mean, isn't that how we, like, form these views of how it should be? Like, our agreed upon, like, unit of, you know, social...
I don't know. I mean, this is a really interesting position you're taking. I can remember these different watershed moments in my life.
Yeah.
Where I really felt like, wow, I have reached the pinnacle of success. Whether it was with physical beauty, you know, having worked out, like, what, 4 or 5 hours a day back in the day when that whole being a dancer, hard body thing was it for me. I can remember having reached that and wondering, why did I feel so empty? Because I really had set that up as being it.
Yeah.
Or the time I got promoted above everybody else, you know, and I had this huge coup. And I can remember having this vacuum feeling like, wow, shouldn't this be feeling like a bigger deal?
Like, you thought you were going to get the whole package.
The whole package. But I wonder if being a celebrity carries with it that whole thing too. Like, wow, apparently, I've got the money, the car, the blah, blah, blah. And then, wow, this is not it. Because there is some kind of underlying expectation that I've experienced.
Yeah.
That was going to happen. And when it didn't, it's lonely.
Yeah.
And surprising.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like if, as a people, we could change our psychology of this, we could understand a little bit better how our brains like to frame stories and write endings. We could get ourselves out of the shame and the anxiety of having to be everything all the time. You know, it's like I kind of see eccentricity as like a solution. Like, the people who seem really happy are people who are really fine being incredibly eccentric. Like, they are just in a niche, happily.
However, you and I are going to have that perspective because Aquarius both is pretty dominant in our charts. So that's going to be an archetype that we in particular are going to respect.
You know, the image is going through my head. You guys remind me of this movie. It's the movie with all of the old British ladies, and they do some kind of, like, they're out of money, or maybe they're in Ireland, and they start growing pot in their greenhouses.
Well, that's Saving Grace.
It's
just one woman named Grace. Her husband is a philanderer, and he heavily mortgages their home.
Right.
So when he dies, She has nothing but bills and no estate. And so
her friends come in and help her?
No. The local gardener who's been helping her suggests she does hydroponic pot.
Yeah.
To be able to get herself out of debt. And it's a hoot because she's trying to go meet a drug dealer to in London. Yeah, so she can sell it. And it's just, she ends up, I mean, it's a funny story. I don't want to give away the ending, but no, it's a hoot. Okay, so I'm the timekeeper. This has been a half an hour.
Yeah.
Seems like, are we at a good place to...
Absolutely
not. To bring ourselves to, I know.
Not at all. We're just getting warmed up.
Yeah, but seriously.
Okay, let's just, so I don't go crazy for the next, like, millennia until we record another one. Let's just tie these, the open strings we have right now,
all right,
up. So just for a future podcast, there's Jupiter. And I want to explore more like how did an archetype that is a feature of life get ascribed to a planet in the sky? And the whole myth of Jupiter and him being like, wasn't Jupiter the king of the gods in the Greeks or the Romans? It was Jupiter and Zeus. It was like the father of the gods or whatever. Or was it Saturn? Well, anyway, there should be a further analysis of the differences between Greek and Roman mythology, a la Zeus and Jupiter. You're like, give me the rolling eyes again.
That wasn't easy to do. I wanted to see if I could do it.
Like, wow, that'd be so interesting for you to do. Not.
Exactly.
Okay.
Sorry.
But there's something here, because I think there is a way of cooperating with the universe. And when we're not cooperating with the universe, there's a lot of chaos in our lives. And things break down. So, like, what are the methods and the practical approaches towards cooperating with the universe? And, like, I think it does fall into a spiritual religious context, because it talks about, like, worship and things like that, and it talks about, like, prayer. And
I think it falls into astrology too.
Yeah.
All right, so how about podcast number 5?
Yeah,
we broach some of these subjects. I will be prepared to talk about things from an astrological standpoint.
Excellent. I know you're trying to get out of this podcast, but I'm going to hold your feet to the fire for just a minute longer. So one of the reasons why I like playing Farmville is that in a state when my whole life is like, seems to be at the effect of really random, subtle, small things, intense reactions and stuff, I can go into Farmville and I know exactly that corn is going to take 4 hours to cultivate.
I understand.
The water comes out of this well here. We feed these goats here.
No,
it's like, and it produces this, it's like a little synthetic, it's a game.
Sure.
But it's a little world that runs like clockwork.
I appreciate
and
that.
And I am like interacting with it, and actually self-worth and esteem. Like I feel a sense of control from simulating life inside this little place. I know it's kind of a vulnerable thing to say, but like,
no, it's
when
true.
Life feels so crazy.
Yeah.
It like, it's nice to have something that's kind of like structured.
You know, I think one thing I want to just say is I think it's super cool, the realization that self-esteem can be grown and cultivated.
Yeah.
That it's not just a static thing that you're stuck with as of your development up until the age of 12 or 13,
yeah,
which was some of the research that used to be at.
Yeah.
I think it's neat that it can be cultivated. And the other thing I want to say is I have compassion for what you're saying, because when I was out of work that time, and had just starting that MBA program.
Right.
You know, I remember I put my whole self in to the point where people were like, why are you working so hard? Don't you know a B is sufficient? But for me, I think my self-esteem took such a hit that I really needed to
be performing really
go
well.
Go for it and get the A's,
yeah,
even in accounting and economic stuff that would not ordinarily be anything I'd be attracted to. But I needed to feel,
yeah,
like I still could do it, like I still had it.
So how do people grow self-esteem? And like, are there any, or self-esteem or self-worth,
yeah,
is there any good books on this?
Yeah,
or?
No, well, but I just, yeah, but what I just, to encapsulate the nutshell, is that it's, you take on things that are challenging or difficult or that are a stretch.
Yeah.
And you see it through to completion.
See, this is why I love doing Big Sky. And like, why this whole thing we're doing, it's extra. It's, mm-hmm, it's work, but it's extra in life. I mean, it's like a hobby that we can do kind of publicly. And okay, this is time sensitive. By making these Big Sky dances on the full moon or close, we have tied ourselves into a major creation once every full moon. I feel like this is somehow, is like I'm tying myself to like a lunar gravity well that's like pushing through me every 30 days. Like, I am so excited and excitable right now. And it's because it's the night before the full moon.
Interesting.
I mean, my biological level of energy, I feel like, is three times what it normally is. My creativity is peaking. Like, I mean, it's going to be hard to relax tomorrow getting ready for that dance because it's so like the moon's there and it's such a big thing to do, you know? But I think we've definitely, or by setting these up on the full moon, we've created this 12 months of intense like pattern. Cause it's like, we kind of relax in our creativity, like in the slough between the two. And then all of a sudden we have to put together the radio shows and we have to put together the music. We have to put together the dance. We have to get it all together. And like all of the calendar events and all the work that goes into it. I think it's really important. Okay. It's important from a self-esteem point of view, cause it's giving something to do. And then it's like a big challenge, but it's also important. It's important to have things in life that you really decide when they start and stop. Because with a job and the economy, you don't. It's really how many orders you get, what your boss says, what opportunities there are. You're going to almost have limitations in that, and that's always going to be like frustrating to the human spirit. But to have a hobby or a pursuit of an interest that's unending, that is an amazing gift to give to yourself.
Neat.
I love astronomy. I love learning about science. I love learning about space. I mean, those are things I can just learn about forever. And it's fantastic because I enjoy it and there's no end. And there's no way I'm even going to catch up a fraction to like what the actual scientists are doing. So it's really cool. There's so many things like that now. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get really into a lot of creation, like of making things that are very useful for other people and engage you with a community of people too.
Yeah, well, just, you know, to tie it up, just like getting to talk to the woman who does roller derby. I mean, how fun. She was so excited. You could just feel it.
Yeah.
And even though she was, you know, bemoaning the fact that she had 2 days until she turned 40, so she was going to turn to be as in her 30s as she could,
right,
on the cusp, you could just feel in her excitement. And I know that feeling. I know that feeling. So it was neat to meet her.
Is the feeling of pursuing your dream?
For me, it's the sense of doing something physical. You know, it's a
physical
sense of
activity, like physical, like achievement,
movement in the body, physical movement, physical achievement, being able to demonstrate kind of physical prowess.
Yeah,
it's a big one for me. I felt that with skiing and with dance and running and
That's awesome.
All right. Dear heart, it's 40 minutes in.
Sorry that I tortured you so intensely.
I enjoyed it immensely. I just think it's good to have
time to not be podcasting now.
Shorter podcasts.
I think these podcasts are amazing because there is no strategy or scope. They simply are.
All right, well, good night.
Good night, everybody. See you on the moon.